This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we begin a week-long series featuring some of our most entertaining interviews of the year. We begin with Keith Richards, the Rolling Stones guitarist. He published his autobiography in October. It's called Life, and it's filled with details about excess and drugs, but it's also filled with stories about growing up in post-World War II England. He was born in 1943. Discovering the blues, songwriting, forming the Rolling Stones, being targeted by police in the U.S. and the U.K., who saw the Stones as a bad influence on youth, becoming megastars, playing stadiums, kicking heroin, his sometimes rocky relationship with Mick Jagger, getting older, and so on. Richards co-wrote much of the Stones' repertoire with Jagger, including Satisfaction, Let's Spend the Night Together, Get Off My Cloud, Gimme Shelter, Sympathy for the Devil, and Beast of Burden. I spoke with Keith Richards in late October. You have a great story in your book about how you co-wrote, well, how you got Satisfaction started. You co-wrote the song with Mick Jagger, but you originated it, and you didn't know you were doing it. Can you?
I wish all the songs could come this way, you know, but you just dream of them, and then the next morning, there they are, presented to you. But Satisfaction was that sort of miracle that took place. I had one of the first little cassette players, you know, Norelco, whatever, you know, Philips, the same thing, really. But it was a fascinating little machine to me, a cassette player, that you could actually just lay ideas down and, you know, wherever you were. I set the machine up and I put in a fresh tape. I go to bed as usual with my guitar and I wake up the next morning, I see that the tape has run to the very end. And I think, well, I didn't do anything. You know? I said, maybe I hit a button while I was asleep, you know. So I put it back to the beginning and push play. And there, in some sort of ghostly version, is... I can't get no satisfaction. And so there's a whole verse of it. I won't bore you with it all. And after that, there's, I don't know, 40 minutes of me snoring. but there's the song and its embryo, and I actually dreamt the damn thing, you know what I mean? And I'm still waiting for another dream.
Now, how did the line, I can't get no satisfaction, come to you at a time when you should have been having a lot of very satisfying, gratifying moments?
Darling, I don't know. I dreamt it.
No, true. Okay.
I mean, nobody's ever satisfied, right? And it was just a phrase that obviously, you know, was buzzing through the mind. And whether you could express anything or enlarge on that idea. Because otherwise I can't get any satisfaction. It's kind of, you know, sort of moaning. But if you then you can take it and expand it, and which Mick did brilliantly. There it is. I mean, these things are all made out of just little sparks of ideas that come to you, and you're lucky to be around to grab them. And that's kind of basically the process of how we work.
Okay, so let's hear Satisfaction. This is the Rolling Stones. My guest is Keith Richards, and he's written a new autobiography called Life.
I tried.
That's the Rolling Stones, and my guest is Keith Richards, and he's written his autobiography. It's called Life. Now, that cassette that you mentioned that you used to write down the idea for Satisfaction in the middle of the night, that so surprised you when you played it back in the morning, that cassette or one just like it was also really helpful to you in coming up with a kind of transformative guitar sound. Would you describe how you would plug your acoustic guitar in motel rooms into
a cassette machine? That's a good question. I'll try. Because there I am, I now have my hands on the best amplifiers in the world and the best guitars. But I'm trying to translate another sound in my head that I can't find through conventional means. I always play a lot of acoustic guitar. And the cassette machine gave it, in those days, before they had things on them called governors, which means that you could not overload the machinery, I would just shove the acoustic guitar and use, basically, I would use the cassette player as an amplifier, basically, and overload the acoustic guitar so it becomes an electric guitar. But at the same time, you see, you still have that feel of an acoustic, which is totally different to an electric. So I'm still looking for the perfect example of this, but I'm going to keep going.
So what you would get is like an electrified acoustic guitar that was also distorted.
Exactly. You got it, Terry. You got it. That's it. I was trying to get the quality and the touch that you can get from an acoustic guitar and then overload it and make it sound like an electric guitar. But at the same time, you have that original acoustic touch because... You know, this gets complicated because guitars are strange animals. but there's a touch that you can get off an acoustic guitar that you'll never get off an electric. And so I was trying to figure how to electrify the acoustic feel and still translate it. And so that was the name of the game. That was it.
Now, it was surprising enough to me to read how you did this in your motel room, but then reading how you did it also in the recording studio was fascinating, that you wanted that sound so much that you brought in the cassette machine and plugged your acoustic guitar into it.
Yes, I mean, I took these ideas and we, the Stones were in the studio, and we were all looking at it and saying, it doesn't have what you had on the, on the original idea. And so finally, after many attempts to try and reproduce this sort of idea, with amplifiers and, conventionally, I think it was Charlie Watts maybe, let's go back to how you did it in the first place and work it from there, which is why you got Street Fighting Man and Jumping Jack Flashes. There are no electric guitars at all. It's just overloaded acoustics. I don't know, I like that denseness of color, of feel, that you can get out of that. And it's an experiment I might take up again once they start making cassette machines again.
So do you think Jumpin' Jack Flash is a good illustration of what you're doing?
Yeah, and Street Fighting Man is probably another great example of it.
Which one would you rather hear?
I love them both, honey. Don't ask me to cut the babies in half.
All right, so we'll go with Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Go there. All right,
So here's the Rolling Stones, Jumpin' Jack Flash, and my guest Keith Richards playing the kind of plugged into the cassette machine guitar that he was just describing. And he has an autobiography called Life.
I
the Rolling Stones, Jumpin' Jack Flash. My guest is Keith Richards, and he has a new autobiography, which is called Life. Then there are the songs that you describe as anti-girl songs that the Stones did, like Stupid Girl, Under My Thumb, Out of Time, Yesterday's Papers. And this is where I've been so ambivalent about some of the Stones songs, like Under My Thumb. Under My Thumb is so catchy. I mean, I think it's just like irresistible what's going on, like melodically and rhythmically in there. And then, you know, I catch myself singing along, and what am I singing, you know, like about this girl who's like, you know, under his thumb. And so, anyways, were you ever ambivalent about that?
Let me try and break in here.
Go ahead.
Terry,
let me break in here
and say, you can take it as, you know, male, female, or it's just people. I mean, it could be about a guy. It could have been, you know, this is just a guy thing, you know, that probably you're actually under her thumb and you're just trying to fight back, you know. I mean, these are all the relationships and stuff, and I wouldn't take it as any, like, sexism. I can't even go there, you know, but I don't think about it. I just think, you know, we know what some people are like, and those things happen. Anyway, I didn't write the lyrics.
Cut to the chase. Off the hook. All right. We're listening back to the interview I recorded with Keith Richards. His autobiography is called Life. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's talk just a little bit about Altamont, which was the music festival in which at the Altamont Raceway in California, which one man was stabbed to death and three others died accidentally. This was a free concert, and you describe how you'd asked the Grateful Dead, by you I mean the Rolling Stones, had asked the Grateful Dead to help organize it because they had a lot of experience with free concerts. And the permits that you'd expected to get for Golden Gate Park and another place or two fell through, and by that time Altamont was the only place available. So when you were on stage there, at what point did you know things were really taking a bad turn and that this wasn't like a Woodstock concert? There was some really nasty things happening in the audience.
There was the potential for nasty things, and nasty things did happen. From my point of view, I was amazed that that was all that happened. Meredith, who went down in this thing,
the man who was killed, stabbed to death.
Yes, the man who was killed. He was asking for trouble, and you have the Hell's Angels there. Basically, from my point of view, I'd say I realized this thing was getting dodgy just by looking at the Angels.
Who were hired to do the security? I think I might have neglected to mention that.
Yeah, so like, you know, the Grateful Dead's guys, and they've said, oh, no problem, you know, these guys, we work with them, and blah, blah. And they said, okay, we just want to know how to do. We just want to throw a free one, you know. Also, a unique time for America, 1969. There were no cops around. It was like, just go off and do what you want to do, you know. They didn't, and there was no control. And it was a very, very weird feeling in the middle of nowhere. You know, Altamont is basically, you know, Mars. And there was nobody else to turn to except who? The Hell's Angels. I'm not going to turn to them. They're all on acid and Thunderbird wine. And I think we did actually an incredible job. If you look at the whole video of it, or the footage of it, that didn't get out of hand, because there was that point where it could have really got out of hand. And I think by just saying, stop it, we ain't going to play, somehow there was a check there, and we managed to prevent a much larger disaster. And but you've got to wing these things. You don't know what's going to happen, you know.
Did you decide at that point what would be the best song to play to quiet things down as opposed to amp things up?
Well, I don't know about whether it was the right song to play, but I think we went into Sympathy for the Devil.
That's what
but,
I thought, yeah.
Yeah, but I think we just wanted something with a rhythm. It didn't really, by then, nobody could hear what anybody was singing or saying or anything. It was just like, hey, you know when there's a fight in a bar room and the band stops and then some stuff goes down and they're like, play some music, whatever it is. We don't give a damn. Just play, divert attention and try and get people into a pulse, So whatever it was, we chose the samba.
Is there anything you wish you had done differently?
That's a good call, and it's very hard to pick out. No, there's nothing I'd have done differently. I'd have had to, how do you deal with things that are just snapping at you straight out the face and you're on the line? I can't think of anything where I said, I wish I'd done that or I should have done that.
Mm-hmm. In describing your approach to songwriting, you talk about vowel movements. That's vowel with a V, as in A-E-I-O-U.
That was with Warren Zevon. That was, yes, my conversation with Warren.
And explain what a vowel movement is.
Well, a vowel, you know what vowels are, right?
Yes.
I mean, there's the oohs and the e's and the r's and the a, without the consonants. And it's where they come sometimes in a record that will either make or break a record. It was about choosing the right sound at the right time to put the right oo or ah, and whether a word should contain that vowel or not. Warren Zevon said to me, he says, damn it, he says, my problem is consonants. You know what I mean? This is a songwriting thing, you know.
But you actually use, oos and ahs in some of the writing.
Think about them and whether they're in the right place. Yeah, I mean, you if you're a songwriter, you've got to think about things like that. I mean, the wrong sounding vowel in the wrong place can ruin a good record.
Now, is Beast of Burden a good example of that? Like in the bridge, in the Am I Rough Enough? Ooh, the oohs there in that bridge?
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's we worked an awful lot on where to put the oohs and the ahs. You got to laugh about this because when you're tearing to bits what it is you actually do, it's kind of weird, right? And, it's very important whether you go E, oo, ah, oo, bam, etc. When you're making a record, because the wrong vowels in the wrong places might trip everything up. So you concentrate on everything when you're writing a song or making a record. It's sometimes probably you concentrate too much. But at the same time, I concentrate on vowel movement.
So I'm going to play Beast of Burden. Do you want to say anything about writing it or what you're playing on it?
No, I loved it. It's another one that came very natural. Sitting around with Mick, here's one. And Mick, see, I write songs for Mick to sing. That's what I do. I mean, you don't get Midnight Ramblers out of nowhere. You don't get Gimme Shelters out of nowhere. I'm writing because I say, man, I know this guy can handle this and nobody will ever be able to handle it any other way. What I do is write songs for Mick to sing. And if he picks up on it, baby, we got. If he doesn't, I'll just let it sit on the shelf.
What are the qualities in his voice and in his personality that you feel you're writing for?
He's an outstanding performer. Hey, you're talking about a mixture of James Brown and Maria Callas here. I gotcha.
That's good.
And to have to work with such an outsized personality, ego, and say, hey, whatever it takes, it's there, and you gotta go for it. And sometimes it doesn't work, and a lot of times it does, and so you just keep on pushing.
My interview with Keith Richards was recorded last October after the publication of his autobiography, Life. Our series featuring some of the most entertaining interviews of the year continues in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Here's Beast of Burden.
NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Cabot Creamery Cooperative, five generations of New England and New York farm families working together to produce naturally aged traditional Vermont cheddar cheese.